All right, Sarah joins us on the show now. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Greg. How are you?
Good, good. Good morning to you. Right, just following on from our conversation as it relates to Mr. Tate before 11 o'clock, what's your view?
Well, I suppose I text in as a parent. Now, I haven't listened to Andrew Tate, but because he's been mentioned so much in the media recently, I had a conversation with my son last week and some of his friends in the car. And I kind of got the impression that teenage boys are feeling a bit lost at the moment, that they're afraid to voice their opinions, that it's all kind of pro-women, pro-LGBT and things like that. And I think Andrew Tate has come in as a bit of a role model because he's, as I said, I haven't listened to him, but I kind of got the opinion from them that he's kind of pro-men. If that makes sense.
Yeah, so he's giving them a voice that they feel like the lowest common denominator, right?
Heterosexual
male sort of a thing. Is that that?
Yes. That'd be the best way of putting it.
Yeah.
That they don't feel that they have a voice at the moment. Now, my daughter was in the car at the same time and she was like, but he's anti-women. And the boys were going, he's not anti-women. So I don't know how the boys are interpreting him compared to what adults might be picking up. As I said, I haven't listened.
I think it's not as much that
it's
he's
on my agenda.
I'm not thinking as much of this anti-women. It's more the role or the place that he sees women, if you know what I mean. So I can understand how your daughter might feel that he's anti her or what she hopes to achieve in her life or what have you.
Mm.
But can also understand then how the younger boys might feel. No, he's not. He's not anti-women. But they probably wouldn't go on to say then. He just believes that your role's not quite as you might think it is, if that makes...
And I suppose...
I can see how both of them...
It's difficult for me to interpret because I haven't listened. But yeah, both of them... my daughter was asked the impression he was anti-women. And the boys were saying that he wasn't anti-woman. And that he's kind of pro, you know, not spending too much time on social media, not spending too much time. And again, as I said, I haven't listened to him, but not spending too much time on computers or computer games, that you have to be going out and working. So this is just the conversation from the car the other day, that they felt that there was a lot of positive things too that he was saying.
So if you had no concerns...
Again, I haven't listened to it.
Sorry, Sarah. Beg your pardon. So if you had no concerns and they just said, oh, by the way, Sarah or Mom, there's this guy called Andrew Tate on the internet and he says this, that and then, right? So say from what they told you in that conversation, you probably wouldn't flag that as negative as such then, would you? You'd probably go, oh, well, that's good. You seem to be getting influence from someone who's teaching you to stay off social media, who's teaching you to, you have to work hard for what you want to achieve. You can't sit in your backside and do it. On the face of it then, it would sound like a positive message.
Yeah, from the conversation that I was getting with the boys, they were picking positives up from it. And as I said, I will stress again, I haven't listened to him. It's on my to-do list because, you know, the conversation needs to be happening with the boys to make sure, you know, that they're not picking things up wrong. But from what I gathered from them, it was all positive. It wasn't anti-women. And again, this is just what the discussion in the car from them.
Well, but, let's put ourselves in the position of teenage boys then. Heterosexual teenage boys, if that matters, but perhaps it does. So they're in the school environment. Are there any sort of talks that are geared to elevate them? Are there any posters or murals on the wall to celebrate them or maybe life is set up that really the default position is that if you're that fella, you're okay. Do you know what I mean? But clearly there's something in that setting that makes them feel like, as I'll go back to the earlier crude way of putting it, that they feel that they're the lowest common denominator, then that must be what they're feeling.
Yeah, and I think so as well, because they were talking about how, you know, there's mental health campaigns or, you know, campaigns around LGBT, you know, and if they're being bullied and stuff like that in school and highlighting the numbers, but there's nothing like that around boys. There's campaigns for women, but there's nothing for boys. There's campaigns around refugees, people of colour, And I think the boys are just starting to feel lost.
Yeah, but those boys aren't...
In everything.
Those boys are far, far, far less likely to be raped. They're far less likely to be
the
victim.
Yeah.
But obviously someone needs to message this to them, Sarah. I'm not sort of counterpointing you. I get exactly what you're talking about. But they're not going to be, possibly if they're white, they're not going to be racially abused. You know, they're not going to...
Oh, no, I 100% agree with you. But
so
I think...
That needs to be part of the conversation then, doesn't it? So they understand.
Oh, yeah, and it totally was. Yeah. But I think I think as adults, you know, or if you're at a certain age, you have grown up where people have been, you know, racially abused, et cetera, et cetera. But these boys have just been growing up with campaign after campaign, and there's nothing... Now, I totally agree with what you're saying, but I think from their perspective, they don't know any different.
Yeah, and I'm not saying...
If you know what I mean, and that's all that they're seeing.
I don't want you to...
But I agree with what you're saying.
I don't want you to think I thought that's what you should be saying. I'm on about... In the social media world or in the school environment, maybe they should be reassured of their space in society, and that's why we focus on other areas, if you know what I mean. I'm not saying you or me or who. I'm just I just want to maybe the space that they're in should account for that, so they understand that. Oh, right, okay, right. I understand now why we're focusing on maybe females, or we're focusing on members of the LGBT plus community. That's why they're not doing campaigns for us. Do you know what I mean? Just the messaging and to make sure, lads, you understand what's going on here. So I also agree with you, Sarah, if that makes sense. I wasn't saying you should be in the car saying it, but I just think we should understand that there's a vacuum here, and it's like the vacuum I talked of to Lorraine before. There's something happening here that people like Andrew Tate's able to go in and fill, and these young lads feel he's talking to us, he gets us.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. The need to find that wee bit of space as well in society.
Yeah, and I think too, at the end of your text.
I think just getting lost in all of the conversations.
For sure, yeah.
But like, those conversations still need to happen. You know, I'm not saying that they shouldn't happen, they need to happen. But I think teenage boys and probably even men out there are starting to feel a bit lost. You know, sometimes a woman can say something and nothing is said off it, but if a man said the exact same thing, you know, they'd nearly be torn to shreds. So I think it's difficult for them at the moment.
Am I coming from
a woman's point of view.
I get you,
so
it's really
I could be completely wrong.
And also, too, am I reading from your text correctly that you're saying, see, even with the refugee situation, that... Are you saying that, you know, women are seen as they're safe and everything's grand, and kids, of course, are safe and everything's grand, but if you happen to be a man, you're the big bad wolf? Is that the point you were making there as it relates to the... I don't want to put words in your mouth, it's just...
No, well, I don't know. I think just from speaking with the boys, there seems to be a place for everybody else, or everybody else seems to have a voice, or somebody speaking out for them. But the teenage boys and probably young men don't have anybody speaking out for them. And maybe, as you said, that's where Andrew Tate is filling that gap. Well, and as I said, I haven't listened to him.
No, I get you.
I don't know, but...
Listen, when we talk about, say, positive mental health, we recognise that particularly with young lads, there's an issue, there can be more of an issue with mental health. We do talk about that quite a bit. I'm just teasing this out as we go, right?
Yeah.
I think, too, if we talk about, say, for instance, young girls not getting abused or assaulted, we're also talking about the future of the young fellas that could be found guilty of perpetrating such acts. So a lot of this is set up to sort of make them better people and to protect them. But clearly there's some issue with the messaging that they feel that they don't matter and everybody else does. Do you think that's...
Yeah, I think potentially. Well, from the conversations in the car the other day.
Nice.
And there was three teenage boys. And that was the impression that I was getting from them. And again, that the messages that they were picking up from Andrew Tate was all positive. They didn't feel anything negative or they didn't think that anything negative was being said against women.
Yeah.
And as I said, I haven't listened to it. And obviously there's multiple experts coming out over the last few weeks saying what he's saying is negative against women.
But do you know, in a way, Sarah, and I think these young people in the car were very lucky to have you in the car as well, because you don't see the people that are mad to defend him and see the people that are mad to sort of, when I say mad, I mean they just want him annihilated from the face of the planet. I think you're somewhere in between, and you know, you've got the clarity of that sort of middle ground to look at this from all angles and find what's best for those young fellas. So, and I don't mean this patronising, Sarah, I think they're very lucky that it happens to be you that's asking that question, because I think you're in the best position to guide them and let them think for themselves and find what will be the right path, rather than them feeling that they have to pick a side. So I think they're lucky to have you, Sarah.
Thank you. I don't know, it's difficult, I think, for...
Do you know what's difficult, Sarah?
Boys, anyhow, and women.
Being a parent. Being a parent's difficult.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Certainly is with social media. And,
it's an absolute minefield to be a parent.
And I think there's so much access now to social media and things online that, I didn't even know that they were listening to Andrew Tate until I brought it up in conversation the other day. With them, are, as so many people said now, they didn't even know who Andrew Tate was until, the last number of weeks. But I think it's important that the conversations are being had with them. And as I said, I need to listen to him myself to kind of, it was hard for me to have the conversation with them as well, because I don't know what he's been saying.
Sarah,
only from what the experts are coming out and saying.
If you find the time, I would love to chat to you again after you listen to what he had to say.
Okay.
If you have the time, I know you've an awful lot of balls in the air juggling, but if you do sort of have the space and time, get back in touch with us. I'd love to get your assessment because of the clarity that you seem to have. I would love to get your assessment of what Tate has to say on things. So if you can, I'd love to chat to you again, Sarah. It's been lovely chatting to you this morning.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank
you so much indeed. Slight delay on the line with Sarah there. So my apologies for that, but her points come across loud and clear. And there's a few comments actually coming in along those lines as well. I would love just to have a conversation, as I say, of a position whereby I'm learning. I've learned from Sarah. I found her views interesting rather than, the extremes of it. But anyway, listen, I can't control the conversation. We'll just have it. 086 60 25,000 WhatsApps and texts. Welcome back. HSE data obtained by Fodo Ireland shows that a total of 1,775 Donegal patients were waiting over a year. In total, 3,698 people were on October's Donegal ophthalmology treatment waiting list. Clodagh McGovern is a Fodo Ireland board member. You do call it Fodo, Clodagh, do you?
Fodo, yeah.
Right, okay,
it stands
for
the Federation of Optometrists and Dispensing Opticians.
Right, okay. So the patients waiting in Donegal, age 0 to 4, 69, 5 to 17, 121, 18 to 64, adults, 878, over 65, 707. So what kind of appointments are these people waiting for, Clodagh?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So I suppose for the adult population, it's more like age-related macular degeneration, glaucoma, cataracts. And then for the younger group, the under 17, just waiting for a regular eye examination. And I suppose what we're trying to highlight is that, research shows that 60% of these existing outpatients could actually be released out into primary care, out into the local optometrist, and thus freeing up the ophthalmologists and surgeons to do what they're really good at, and also allowing us to reduce the waiting list. So there are ways around reducing these waiting lists, and that's, I suppose, we're trying to appeal to the HSE and to Stephen Donnelly to make these changes.
Yeah, I get you. I mean, you've identified a problem and you're identifying a solution. And obviously, it'd be in the interest of Fodo members as well as the people they'd be treating. So I wonder, do we have a figure or even a guesstimate of how many of these appointments, 1,775 for Donegal patients, would actually be in Donegal? Because some of these services, I think, are provided in Sligo. Do we have any idea if?
No. So that when they release the figures, it's just linked with the counties. So I suppose with Sligo, there's a really good pilot thing there at the minute that you're obviously aware of. And just to explain to your listeners what that looks like, it's the only place we're doing shared care in the country. So if you went in, and instead of having to go back into the hospital for your follow-up appointments, you'd actually be going back into your local optician. And that's what shared care looks like. And as a result, in Sligo, it's been really successful because it's reduced the waiting list. And also, it's so much easier on patients if you're living several, you know, or 100 miles away from the hospital, but you're only a few miles from your local optometrist. It's a win-win for everyone. Mm. We can reduce waiting lists and also make it easier on patients. So that scheme in Sligo has been only a pilot scheme. And what we would love to see is that rolled out nationwide, you know, so that everyone would have the same access to that sort of shared care scheme.
Yeah, I mean, much of this waiting list could be cleared very, very quickly, I'd imagine. A lot of those young people going in for eye tests, I did that with a couple of mine, and then at some random point, they say, you're not coming back to this place anymore, you're going to Specsavers or some other opticians, do you know? So, I mean, some of this obviously might be more complex, and I'll tease that with you, but an awful lot of this, I imagine people could start getting appointments in days.
Oh, days. And that's what we're trying to appeal, is that what we would like to see is that we can develop a new programme for school children. So optometrists have the capacity and also the expertise to see children in communities. But the system that exists at the moment is that a child is screened in their infant years in school. And if they fail that screening, they're then put on the waiting list to see an ophthalmologist. And what happens then is that child could sit on the waiting list for a year or longer. Whereas if the HSE were to collaborate with the local optometrist, that person could be seen within a week or two.
And what they get done when they wait to go on that list to see an ophthalmologist is the exact same that they could get in your local opticians or your big opticians or whatever it is. There's no, it's not like they're doing anything that can't be done, and then you can get glasses prescribed. I presume, say, for instance, if there were corrective lenses needed for a weaker eye, your local ophthalmologist would be able to do that as well. It's not something that's
your local
unique.
Optometrist.
It's optometrist.
So the ophthalmologist is kind of, no, you're okay. I know it's a mouthful, isn't it? No, so the ophthalmologist is based in the hospital and it's the optometrist.
But they're the same people, aren't they?
No.
I mean, they do the same job, do they not?
For the children, they do.
For the children. Yeah, that's, so we'll move on to the other age groups then. So I just wanted to...
But no, can I just make one point
of
that before we move away from the kids? Because a really important part of it is that we know that early intervention for children and their eyes has a significant impact on what their lifelong vision will be. And if we leave children on a waiting list and we don't intervene in time, they potentially have the consequence of that for the rest of their life. So the children's waiting list is actually very significant. And, you know, if we know that, we shouldn't leave one child on a waiting list, not alone. In Donegal, there's been 190 children on a waiting list for over a year. And unfortunately, it's the worst waiting list in the country at the minute is in Donegal. And it's not right to, I just think in this day and age, you know, we're 2023 in a developed country, we know better, we know early intervention works. You know, we shouldn't be leaving children on a waiting list for one day.
All right, just one other question on that then. So can a parent or guardian then say, I'm going to be sitting on this waiting list for another year, I'm just going to go straight into my opticians and get it sorted?
Yeah.
So they can't do that. They're not, but
no, they can. Yeah. Of course, they can. They can go into their local optometrist, but the HSE doesn't cover that. So, in order to access free eye care for a child, you have to go through the system that's there at the moment.
I'm not sure if it's worth it, and I know it's easy for me to say that because, you know, everyone's got different levels of resources. But I, with what you're talking about, you know, I'm not sure if the saving is worth it at all. If you can find some way to find your money.
I know, but I suppose it's not right either. And the HSE have a responsibility to every child in this country so they can access free eye care. And so I think, yes, a parent could do that, but I think it's up to the HSE to step up and to facilitate that eye care for every child in this country.
And as we get older, it's a mixed bag, of course. It's a difference between, presumably it's a mixture between treatment and aftercare, a combination of which would also greatly ease these waiting lists, I'd imagine.
Oh, hugely. I mean, as I said in the beginning, like, the research shows that 60% of outpatients in hospitals at the moment could be released out into community. You know, we see the shared care in Sligo working. We see it working, you know, across the UK and Scotland and Wales, where they work with shared care and it minimises the outpatient waiting list. Mm-hmm. And we can do that. And if you don't mind, last year, if I can read this out for you, Minister Donnelly last year at one of our conferences said that he fully accepts that we need to do more to address unacceptable high waiting lists, including in our eye service. He went on to say then that community optometrists are delivering poor eye care services in this country through this state community optometrist service scheme. But he believes that optometrists have the potential to play a greater role, and his officials are working with the HSC with a view to contracting more services out into the community.
Yes.
So, you know, Stephen Donnelly has acknowledged this. He knows it, but unfortunately, very little has been done.
Well, you see, the problem is that, and for me, the more I dig into this, it seems to always go back to the same thing. Are there a group of civil servants somewhere that actually make the decisions that feel that if they were to farm some of this out to private, that it would in some way, for whatever reason, be seen as a failure or a failure of their system or the catalyst for something? I don't know what the motivation for them to resist this might be, but it's working in Sligo. We have a problem. We have a solution. With all respect to the health minister, he doesn't have really a great deal of decision-making power. There are obviously members of the permanent government or civil servants who are resisting this for one reason or another, and I suspect it might be that it'll be seen as, well, the public service isn't working, and look how quickly the private service were able to fix it up, and maybe that could snowball into something that they're scared of.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Greg, and you know, you're probably on the money there with it. But at the end of the day, I think it's not he said, she said, who side of the fence. Like, let's just put the patient at the centre of our decision.
Oh, I know that. But I know that maybe Stephen Donnelly might have the best interests at heart. I know that you do. And I know the patients do. But unfortunately, I don't believe the conversation amongst those three people gets us to where we need to be. And this is no disrespect for you. I just feel we're having an awful lot of the same conversations about certain things. And I just think we need to actually get to the people that are making these decisions and challenge them as to why they're not making logical solutions that would make so many people's lives so much better. You know, because Mr.
Totally
Donnelly can say whatever he likes, but unfortunately, it doesn't mean something happens.
No, and the thing is, there's a huge appetite from patients and from professions to have change. You know, it's there. And putting in a shared care scheme is a win-win for everybody. And I suppose we can just keep talking about it in some ways, but hopefully, you know, but even just having these interviews at the HSC and the like Stephen Donnelly are listening, and that you'd hope that they would action something to improve these waiting lists.
I mean, obviously there's a pilot going in Sligo. It's been going for quite some time now and the feedback is working pretty good. Is there some concern within the industry that this is just going to elapse or it's not going to be adopted more widely? Do you know what I mean? In other words, why am I speaking to you and we're not trusting the system, not trusting the system to see that it's working in Sligo, roll it out everywhere? What are your concerns?
I don't know what's blocking that rollout, to be honest. Mm. And like Sligo is not, like, that's going to continue going. You know, that's been a huge success. Everyone has acknowledged the success of it, so I can't understand why it hasn't been rolled out nationwide yet.
Just a couple of questions.
Nobody can understand that.
Do you know if children are screened for ocular melanoma? Are these the freckles, effectively, that can be on the back of the eye?
Yeah, like in the screen they would be, but it is just a screening. It's not a full eye examination. So, like with any screening, not everything gets picked up, and you know there's over and under referring as well within screening. So I think if a parent has any sort of concern or they have family histories, that they really do need to be going for a full eye examination.
Yeah, I'm at the beginning of needing eye care. Should I be going private from the get-go? It's not something I can't afford, but I can try to. Sorry, it's not something I can afford, but I can try to budget. In for it. I don't want to be waiting over a year. I mean,
No, so can I just pick you up on that point? So just to be clear, the people that are on the waiting list have been referred in.
Yeah.
So for your normal routine eye examination, you can go into your local optometrist. Your PRSI or medical card would cover that for a free eye examination for you. And if you had to pay privately, you know, it's around the €50 mark. And it's just after that, if somebody has a problem, like they have glaucoma or macular degeneration, that they're then referred into the ophthalmology system, because that's the system that's in place and that's what has to be done.
And can you correct me if I'm wrong here, just because the word public and private's being used by all of us here, not you, you know what you're on about, I don't. I mean, obviously there are there's public eye care, and then there's stuff that can just be routinely done, which would be private, obviously, with a private company. But then there's private eye care, then, which is a different thing altogether, isn't it? That might involve.
I know what you're saying. So,
like glaucoma or something.
The local optician is everything in it. Yeah. So the local optician, you know, has it treats everyone the same, and it just depends on how it's funded. So if you have a medical card, it's funded that way. If you peer aside,
and could they remove a cataract in your local? You couldn't remove a cataract.
No, that's you can't do that.
See, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm talking about. Another area of private practice. There's sort of three, but most of it can be done. I get you. Does that make sense? You understand why I'm trying to clarify that?
No, I do, yes, okay, but I hope you haven't confused the listeners.
Oh, well, listen, they're well used to it. most of them listen every day. I've been waiting on my eye appointment for 6 months now. Am I better to sit tight, or should I be contacting somebody?
Well, I mean, you can contact somebody. But I would say is, if you're on a waiting list and everything is stable, then, you know, maybe you just have to sit tight. But if you feel there was any deterioration or a change in the reason that you've been referred, then if you go back to your local optometrist, they'd re-examine you, and they would then send in another letter, which if things have worsened, then you might increase your chances of moving up the waiting list.
And I think too, in certain areas, I'm thinking too, particularly with school children, you know, maybe some things are missed with the current system and what have you. I just think if we reimagined that and maybe tapped into a lot of the expertise that we're talking about that's available there, I just think not only would we have sort of people being more seen more quickly, and also, you know, better outcomes because they're seen more quickly, but I just think it might be a better system that that could be taken from the HSE's hands, not from their hands, sorry, but you know, the actual.
No, I know. Yeah. No, you're totally on the ball, Greg. I have to say, like, what's the system that exists now is that children get screened once in their junior years. The reality is that our vision continues to change and grow and develop as you get older, so it's not right just to do a screening once when that child is 5 or 6 and never to screen the child again after that.
And what happens if they're off sick or they're not there, or I don't know?
Well, you'd hope they'd follow up with that.
Well, I mean, you see, that's the gaps that unfortunately I've experienced of that people can fall through, and I just feel a different system could be a catch-all so that every parent and guardian would have every best chance to say, no, well, I'll make a new appointment. Right, well, as I say, you know, we're seeing it in action to some extent in Sligo. I think you can say with absolute confidence that 1,775 Donegal patient waiting list could be started to be eaten into really, really quite quickly. As I say, we've identified the problem, we've identified the solution, we've got a pilot project just down the road from here. The question, we've seen Minister Donnelly is positive towards it in his words. We need to, and that's the role of opposition parties to find out exactly precisely what's going on here. Anything else you think is important to add, Clodagh?
No, I think you've got it, you know, and I think just from Donegal that it's what's happened at the minute is that it is that postcode lottery, and unfortunately, being in the postcode of Donegal at the minute is
the numbers very rarely come up here, unfortunately, Clodagh.
Well, it's really unfortunate, you know, that we need a national approach to ensure fairness for everyone across the country, that it shouldn't matter where you live.
100%. That's what
I know. You know that.
Yeah, but that's what we try. It's just everywhere you turn, it just feels like things are going against you. But as I say, we have fantastic people working in pretty much every town in this county that could be part of the solution to this if we just explore it. Right, Clodagh McGovern, Fodo Ireland board member. Maybe one quick question here. Sorry, I had a cataract removed and they scored the cornea, so I have a permanent blur. Is there anything that can be done to rectify this, or anywhere I can go? My eyesight is now impaired.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'd say that there could be multiple things there that could need to be looked at. I would say the first point of call, go back to your local optometrist, let them assess it, and they'll know then what the best port of call
there's
is
options.
For that person. There's options. Lovely. There is, of course. Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you very much indeed. Clodagh McGovern, Fodo Ireland board member. I just nearly read her telephone number out there. Listen, thanks very much for that. 086 60 25,000. WhatsApps and texts to that number. Okay, 086 60 25,000. WhatsApps and texts to that number. Give us a call in 074 91 25,000. 074 91 25,000. Emails come into us, comments at highlandradio.com. A caller says, if people have a strong view on equality, they should change network. If their phone shop does not accept cash, this is no cash is taken away the right for some people to shop independently. If you believe in equality, shopping for everyone, you can help us by changing your phone network. All right, okay. Well, that's up to each individual. Hi, Greg. Still no email from the Fomar Festival regarding refunds and no updates on the Facebook page. We'll follow them. We'll follow them up again. Right, to try and get a response for you. Right, it is Monday focus time, and we're joined on the programme by our next guest, Bernadine. How are you getting on, Bernadine? Are you well?
I'm very well, Greg. How are you?
Good to have you on your show. You are from Relax Kids Donegal.
That's right.
Talk to us about that organisation or that group, or however you might describe yourselves.
Okay, so Relax Kids, Greg, is it's a franchise that I have. Relax Kids was set up in England in 2000, set up by a lady called Marinetta Vegas, and she was a child entertainer at that time. And she could see the changes with mental health in children and how come they weren't being focused, they weren't good at concentration. So then she devised the plan then of Relax Kids around that and using the, you know, the fairy tale stories. So just to help with kids to relax more so to giving them tools for life on how to deal with anxiety, how to deal with worries. It's for children right across the board.
It's coping mechanisms or tools, or it's to recognise it, I suppose, in the first instance, and then to adopt behaviours or routines or whatever it might be. It's not something you have to live with all of your life, anxiety, really.
Oh, absolutely not. Oh, no, no. That's what I mean. It just helps children. It gives them a toolkit for life on how to deal with anxiety, how to deal with worries. And, you know, it's if you can teach children at a young age, at 4 or 5, like if they stand in good stead, then how to deal with their emotions when they become a teenager.
Yes.
As they grow up into their future life. So they know then how to deal with all these things.
So what kind of age groups of children are you working with, and what are they presenting with?
So I start working with kids as young as 3 who are presenting issues with anxiety, with
how
worries.
How might anxiety manifest itself in a 3-year-old, Bernadine, I beg your pardon?
The parents come to me and they can see that there's been a huge change in their child. At 3 years, like a child shouldn't have any anxiety at 3 years, 4 years of age. I suppose things have been hard on them this past 2 years with COVID and things like that. And they're presenting all these issues now with no social interaction, performing well in schools. And, you know, they feel isolated now. I suppose they've more games and things like that too. They're more access to things. And so, so kids as young as that are coming to me with...
But I'm just wondering at that stage, because there's the old nature-nurture thing, you know, I'm just wondering, are we looking at, you know, what's causing it? You know, is it us as parents or guardians? Is it something that people are being born with? You know what I mean? What are the triggers? I mean, it's great that we're going to talk more about how you tool people and help people, but... The rate of anxiety amongst young people at the moment, and we were talking about this last week, and that's why we're speaking to you today. It's off the scales. Like, they've not seen anything like it. And as well as the great work that you're doing in trying to help people deal with it, I just think we need real studies to find out why 3 or 4 or 5 year olds are presenting with anxiety.
Absolutely. Like, they shouldn't have any anxiety. Like, when we were 3, 4 and 5, you were out playing, you had, you know, as you said in the show the last day, you were out climbing trees, you were doing loads of things like that. But now it's just, I think kids are just in this sort of bubble, maybe wrapped in cotton wool, maybe to a certain extent, where they don't actually get to live and be a child. And I think too, and a lot of parents would have said to me as well, is, you know, there's too much talk in front of children. Like, children now are absorbed, like, they're little sponges, they absorb everything. They have, you know, maybe financial troubles at home, mortgage troubles, you know, no work. And all this now has been spoken in front of children. And they are soaking that up. Mm. I mean, and, you know, when we were young, we were put out of the room. You know, there's an adult conversation going on, you know, get out of the room and we'll talk you know, but now kids are just absorbent to all of that.
But they're not tooled. You see, it's all right for us as adults to try and deal with the problems life throws at us, but we've built up over those same years that we're alive, we've built up ways of trying to cope with it, some of us better than others. A 4, 5, 6, 7, 8-year-old hasn't got those. You know, they don't know how to filter or line their ducks up to deal with stressful situations like you've been outlining. Now, I just want to recognise the fact that, say, for instance, in a situation like defective concrete homes, there is no way to protect your children from that. You cannot protect your children from those conversations because it's their lived life and their reality. So I think both you and I, Bernadine, recognise that. But there are other areas that maybe we aren't careful, you know, what we're talking about in front of the children. Do you have that conversation with parents, though, as they bring their children in, Bernadine? Because it's a toughie.
It is a toughie, but as I said to them, you know, I said I'm not a counsellor, I'm not, you know, I'm a relaxed kids coach. I'm here to give children the tips on how to deal with all these emotions that they have. And, you know, referring back to the, you know, the kids that are involved with the Mika, I mean, you know, it's very hard for children, and I would love to be able to do something for them, to give them little tools, maybe just to help to get through it, and hopefully the parents can find the strength and the courage to keep going with it as well.
And we'll talk after the break, but this is stuff that's tried and tested, that's been proven to work.
With the relaxed kids?
Yeah, you know, the tools that are used, the approach to it, it's tried and tested. Listen, stay where you are, because I do have to catch up on I don't have to catch up, it's actually scheduled a very quick break, and then that clears the decks then, and we can start sort of getting to solutions and what people can do to help and what Bernadine can do to help you after these. We're in conversation as part of Monday Focus this morning with Bernadine Boyle of Relax Kids Donegal. And, you know, we're not going to be able to get through it today in terms of what might be causing this stuff. But I think it'd be worthy of analysis on a national scale, you know, through the HSE or whatever office might be responsible. Bernadine, I don't know if you agreed, to sort of try and find out what could be a cause in a spike, rather than just saying, oh, well, it was COVID or it was this. And I understand that could be it. But I think I would like our health service to drill in a little bit more deeper, so that maybe it can help us as parents as well, tool us up as well. What do you think?
100%, Greg. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there has to be something done for children, and to see why all these anxieties are being presented now, or what's causing it. I suppose there's just, I mean, to be honest, Greg, how I got into Relax Kids was I became a single mum, which is another issue that kids have to deal with. And so I was trying to find tools to help my child to get through that process of what we were going through. You know, he was very young, and that's how I got into Relaxed Kids. I thought it was going to help my child to get through.
And that's a very common scenario as well.
It's
like, lots of people
scenario.
Listening will be able to relate to you. Right, okay, so obviously, you know, you want people come and avail of your services, but I mean, what basic advice can you give parents and guardians, I wonder, Bernadine?
It's to giving them tips on how to relax and how a parent can relax. So when you have a relaxed parent, you have a relaxed child. And I do classes with adults as well. So giving them the tips on how to deal and how to cope with your child.
Do you find yourself then dealing with family units, Bernadine?
Family units, family units and adult groups, like the parent groups, ICA groups, local women groups. So I do classes with all of them. So basically with the benefits of Relaxed Kids, we're taking them from a high energy. So I have them running, screaming, shouting through the place, getting all that anger, frustration, getting all that out of them. So we do movement, we do play, stretching, massage. So it's a self-massage on themselves, breathing exercises. Then I do believe, which is the visualizations, or, you know, telling them that, you know, I am good, I am brilliant, I am happy. Building up their confidence. And then the last part then is the relaxation, where they just lie in their blanket and they go to sleep. Some of them actually do go to sleep. And I read them a guided meditation.
And some of those tools are really quite interesting. I read somewhere about You know, I was feeling pretty anxious. Well, I'm pretty anxious all the time, but I was feeling pretty anxious this one particular day. And I was reading about putting stuff in a box. You know, your emotions are what's making you anxious in a box, and then visualizing the box and putting the lid in the box and then finding a place to put. I felt pretty good after it, to be honest with you. I don't know how it worked. I don't know if I just tricked myself or something. But my point is saying, like, I've quite a lot of faith in I'm not saying that's what you're telling people to do, but I have a lot of faith in these processes, I think, that you know, these tools that you can give people, like the example I've given there, but you know, the self-massage and the Believe program that you talk of, like, you know, the mind probably is very complex, but it can be very easily sort of manipulated as well, presumably to your benefit.
Oh yeah. And that's with the Believe part, like, that's building up their confidence. So it's funny, as you mentioned a box, what I use in one of the in the Believe part is I have a box and it's all wrapped, and I have, you know, special, amazing, brilliant, unique, calm written on the top of the box, or, you know, labeled on the top of the box. And then I ask the children to come up and say, okay, what do you think is inside the box? Do you think there's something special, or do you think there's something amazing in here? And they'll say, okay, there's something special. And when they open the lid of that box and I have a mirror placed inside, they see themselves and they're like, oh my God, am I special? Am I amazing? You know, and to hear children, you know, to come out with that and think, God, I am actually special. I am amazing. And I am happy. And the smile on their faces is just, it's brilliant. Like, it's really brilliant.
Yeah, caller says children are too pampered, too much talk. The parents talk too much in front of their children. They were far better off when they were out playing. But listen, you know, there was always been, I think really back in my day, you would have said, oh, that young lad's a warrior. You know what I mean? Or anxiety would have been labelled in different ways. I don't think anxiety is anything new. I think that, you know, that there's people have had, I just think we're maybe better identifying what it is now. And also we have to recognise that there seems to be more of it about. But it's not a new phenomenon, anxiety, Bernadine.
Oh, it's not new. It's something that's been there for years, and I suppose now that there's more maybe projects like Relax Kids, or there's different projects out there that help with all of these situations for children. So yeah, it's, you know, with Relax Kids, that's all I can do, and I try and help with children and to get over that stage, like, with no confidence as well, and they have like, some of them are shy, like when they come to me, they're clinging on to their mother, you know, don't go mommy, I don't want you to go. So there's all this panic and just out of sorts and very stressful. And so when the parent comes back and sees them lying on the ground with their blanket over them sleeping, they're like, what have you done to my child? Like, he was all anxious and worried an hour ago to now where he's lying on the floor and he's totally, totally relaxed. So it's just giving them that time and space. Just to relax.
My 8-year-old son's not sleeping at night. It's gotten really bad since the Christmas holidays. Any tips? Like, is that? If you're 8 and you're not sleeping, your probably mind's working. His mind's probably working 10 to the dozen there in bed.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and there's plenty of more children like that too, where they're not sleeping. And again, it's the time and space before bed. I'm no professional, you know, but. It's giving them the time just to relax before bed. Some people say, you know, even lavender sprayed on the pillow, reading them a story, a guided visualization, maybe again, just to calm them down in their bed, and set a regular bedtime as well to get into that routine that they know that's 7:30 bedtime or 7:45 bedtime. So they have that routine as well.
Yeah, okay. Bedwetting. Is anxiety a cause of that?
I would imagine yes, Greg. That's again more down to there's something going on there that's obviously causing that. There's some sort of stress, there's some sort of anxiety brought on by that, by worries, maybe not doing well at school. There's an underlying problem there to relax the body again, and to calm the body down again. And I would use part of the Relaxed Kids program too. I would use laughter yoga, and I would also use EFT, emotional freedom technique. So again, that's dealing with the body again and calming the body down.
Yeah, someone's talking about weighted blankets. Is that bad for growing children? I've never heard of it. I don't know if it's about anxiety or sleeping, but I would be more inclined to sort of try and get to what might be stopping a child's sleep rather than buying a heavier blanket.
Yes, I would rather get to the root of the problem, yeah, rather, you know, and seeing what is causing it. Yeah, I just saw them weighted blankets actually very recently, so I'm not very familiar with them, but I would definitely get to the root of the problem and see what's causing it.
Phones are contributing to children's mental health. They don't be outside enough. Screens in general are not beneficial. I think it's the phones. It's whether they're on the phones or not. But you see, they could be outside for 10 hours a day and on their phone for 5 minutes, and they could hit on something in that 5 minutes that ruins their day. I think we, again, need to be leaving them a space to talk about what they're looking at on the phones and what they're seeing on the phones that might be affecting their mental health. Do you know? I mean, it's, you know, whether they're on them for 8 hours or 10 minutes, I'm not sure that matters as such. Maybe it does. But once they're on them, they're on them. They could get that one insult or that one negative remark that ruins their night. I think it's more a case of tooling them on how to use the phone and to talk to you if something upsets them on it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And it just takes one message or something just to spoil that day. So again, back to giving tips again on how to deal with that, and how to deal with all, you know, all them frustration things that they have. And they're more open to phone and social media now, and they're easily targeted for, you know, a hard time with phones and games. So it is a lot harder for them at the minute.
Right. OK, there's a lot there. And there are solutions as well. Hope is a very important thing. I think, too, it's also very important that parents are in a good space, too, because, you know, they're sponges, children, and they pick up an awful lot of stuff from us, and we can help ourselves, and then we're in the best position to help them as well. More information, people can go to Relax Kids Donegal. Is that correct, Bernadine?
Yeah, Relax Kids Donegal on Facebook and on Instagram as well. And there's class details of all the classes that I have running at the minute.
And there are adults as well, by the way. So a few people are asking, do you provide services for adults? Okay. Listen, thanks for your time. I really appreciate it. I know we were supposed to speak before, but things ran. So thanks for being so flexible with us, Bernadine. And we'll chat again in the future. Take care of yourself. Bernadine Boyle there. Relax Kids Donegal. Today we had an awful lot of calls and comments coming in, and we also had an awful lot lined up, so I didn't get to them. So please don't think I'm filtering your comments. I know there's an awful lot of comments in there on EVs, which I want to continue the conversation on the Andrew Tate conversation, the stuff in there as well. So they're not being sidelined. We'll get to them tomorrow throughout the course of Tuesday. But that's where we have to leave it for another 3 hours on a Monday. Thank you so much for being with us, and we're back with you tomorrow morning at 9. Do you know who else is back tomorrow morning? No one. John Bresson's back today, just after 12, is the point I was trying to get at. Right, chat to you tomorrow. Stay tuned. John's next.